I'm William Shatner, sometimes known as Walter Bascom, in a future I created called Tech War. Welcome to Capstone, and prepare to witness the technology of the future today in Tech War, the game of CD-ROM.
Everybody, welcome to another episode of Classic Gaming Brothers. I'm Zach.
And I'm Seth.
And we are the Classic Gaming Brothers.
That's right.
That's right. What do they say, Seth? Always classic, sometimes classy.
Sometimes, yeah. Sometimes. Usually not, though. Usually not. Yeah. Just another day, another episode. Producer Doug hasn't yelled at us lately, so I'm sure that will change after this episode.
It is apparently National Sibling Day, though, according to my calendar, as of recording of this episode.
Oh, of the recording, yes. What are you going to get for your sibling?
I didn't get any gifts for my siblings. Did you get a gift for your siblings?
I don't believe in these national days.
You don't believe in siblings?
No, I don't believe in these holidays. Yeah, what a downer beginning here.
Why? You're the one that made it a downer.
Well, no, you made it a downer with your presence.
Wow.
A-ba-dum-sh.
Anyway, Seth, why don't you tell me what you've been recently playing?
So recently I've been playing Life Goes On, Done to Death, which was released back in April of 2014, which by our definitions of a game that is 10 years or older, makes it officially a classic game, which is fun. So then we can talk about A Life Goes On, Done to Death as its own episode. It was developed and published by Infinite Monkeys Entertainment, which I looked up their website, and that's what they've done. It looks like they have some projects in the pipeline, but pretty much Life Goes On is one of their main games that they did. It's a comical puzzle platformer where in order to progress through the puzzles, you have to die. The bodies that you leave behind, you can use to solve puzzles.
Oh.
And you're all in your quest to find the cup of life. You're all different knights, and every time you spawn, you're a different knight, and your name shows up at the bottom, and then when you die, your name gets crossed off, and a new name appears the next time you spawn. You can control the spawning of your character as well, so if you need to delay the spawn because you're waiting for something to happen on the map, you can do that. It's also a physics puzzle, so there's like, if you put enough dead corpses on something, eventually you may make the, like, teeter-totter. It's a great game if you have like 10 or 20 minutes to play and you just want to have something that's a little lighthearted and fun and think a little bit. So it's a fun puzzle game. I recommend it. You play in a very linear fashion. There's some branching paths, however, but you're going like progressing through world map. And yeah. Every level has its own trial. So it's like try to get through the level with the appropriate number of deaths. You can spend as many deaths as you want. The game will continue to spawn characters. And then afterwards, it'll say an ideal run would have been 3 deaths and you had 50. So then you can go, I must have did that puzzle wrong, but I still solved it. So it's a fun game, very light, and it's good. I like it. It's one of those more lighthearted games that I end up going back to when I am like in between games. I'll pick it up sometimes and just play a little bit. But yeah, so Life Goes On, Done to Death. Zach.
Yes, Seth.
What have you been recently been playing?
Seth, recently I've been playing a game that will actually be on brand for today's episode. The game I've been playing is Doom 2 RPG. Released originally back in 2009 for Java ME mobile phones and then in 2010 for iOS, Doom 2 RPG is a sequel to Doom RPG, which was also a mobile phone game. Both games were created by id Software and were mobile exclusives. However, thanks to the magical technology that is source ports, people have brought these games to the PC. These are not official ports to the PC. Rather, some dedicated fans wanted to play the game without having to emulate an iOS or a Java ME mobile phone and were able to get the games running through their own executables. Doom RPG is a game that I previously played and I talked about in a recently played many moons ago. I don't remember when exactly, but when I figured out that Doom 2 RPG had a similar port that came out, I jumped on the chance to play it. Like Doom RPG, Doom 2 is from a first-person perspective. Instead of being able to move freely as you would in a normal game of Doom, your character moves one space at a time, and your view is limited to four cardinal directions. So you can view what's in front of you, but you can't like point diagonally, so you can only point forward, point to the left, point to the right, point behind you. When you encounter enemies, there is a turn-based system, so the enemies will take a turn, and then you will take a turn, or vice versa, depending on who encounters who first. Traditionally, an enemy is given a move turn and an attack turn. Sometimes they'll take two attacks, sometimes they'll move twice. Similarly, you're usually given only one turn, depending on the items you use, so if you take a consumable, sometimes you can give yourself an extra move turn, along with an attack turn, and this really changes the pace of how Doom's played, as you can imagine. You are given a variety of weapons, as any Doom guy would have. So you start off with a rifle, which actually looks very similar to the Doom 3 SMG. You later attach a sniper to it. There's a shotgun, a chain gun, a rocket launcher, a plasma rifle, the BFG, a soul cube, which is a weapon from Doom 3. And the soul cube, it's actually more powerful than the BFG in the sense that it will insta-kill most enemies, but it will only kill one enemy at a time. And you also have to kill up to five enemies before using the soul cube, so it takes charges. And there's also one of my favorite weapons in all of Doom games ever, the holy water gun. It's a water pistol that has holy water in it, and when you spray demons, it makes them scared and they run away from you for a turn or two before they return aggro. It's incredibly useful when fighting demons, not so when fighting zombies, because zombies aren't considered the damned, so holy water does nothing on them.
Does it make them wet?
The zombies, it just makes them wet, yes. And then it says this weapon has no effect on the undead. Each weapon has various quirks to them. Some will give you multiple shots per turn. So for example, if you fire the chain gun, it will shoot like six rounds before your turn's up. If you fire the plasma gun, it fires like four shots. The rifle fires two shots, etc. And also, various weapons require special ammunition. So your rifle requires standard ammo, your shotgun requires shells, the rocket launcher requires rockets, the plasma rifle requires plasma cores. Now, the gameplay is not only very unique, as I've talked about, but the plot is also unique in that you play as either three different characters who have been sent to the moon to deal with an invasion from hell. You learn that the UAC, which is the organization that is often responsible for things going wrong in Doom, have accidentally summoned demons from hell, and these demons are being controlled by an evil AI called Vios, who you have to fight a couple points in the game. There's actually these sequences where you talk to Vios and he pulls you into the digital world. And when you fight him, if you do enough damage, he'll grow in power and he'll say, choose either Moloch or delete. And if you choose delete, he will gain immense power and usually kill you. If you choose Moloch, you, I believe, are like selling part of your soul to him, and he will gain power, but over time. So when you fight him at the end, he'll be exponentially harder than if you delete each time. There's also kind of a weird blend of graphics in the game. Doom 3 had come out, I believe, just prior to Doom 2 RPG. So there's a lot of Doom 3 assets that have been redrawn to this almost 2D style, and they've kind of been merged with classic Doom sprites. So you have like weapons that appear very much like Doom 3 weapons, but all the demons are like Doom 1 and Doom 2 demon drawings. There are some unique other quirks to the game. For example, there are NPCs that you can talk to. Your Doom guy can talk. He actually speaks to people and sometimes to himself. And unlike pretty much every other Doom game, he has a name. His name is Sergeant Stan Blazkowicz, and he is the grandson of BJ Blazkowicz from Wolfenstein.
Oh, that's fun.
It is fun. It's a short game. I mean, it's a mobile game, so it's designed to be playable within a sitting. I think in total it took me only maybe like 4 or 5 hours, maybe less than that, and it's pretty straightforward in terms of gameplay. It is a lot of fun though, and if you get a chance to download it, download the source port, you do have to go to archive.org or, you know, another website to get the totally legal Doom 2 RPG files. But once you get everything running, it runs great, and it's a fun little experience. And it's kind of an odd way to play Doom, but I liked it. So I recommend Doom 2 RPG and Doom RPG for that matter. Both are very odd little pieces of id Software history. And if you like RPGs, you'll probably like them.
It took them a while to get the Doom 2 RPG onto the PC. I think Doom 2 came last year, and it took them like 17 years or something to bring it over.
Ridiculous amount of time to get everything running. Doom 1 RPG, from my understanding, was a bit easier, but they still took a while. They have not yet ported over Wolfenstein RPG, which is also by the same team that made Doom and Doom 2 RPG. And by the same team, I mean there was kind of a section of id Software that was dedicated to these. And one of these people was Catherine Anna Kang, who was married to John Carmack for a while. And from my understanding, Catherine Anna Kang was like primarily the person who made these games. Like John Carmack worked on like programming and stuff like that, but it was Catherine Anna Kang. Like this is her vision.
The RPG games.
Yeah, the RPG games. Yeah. Now, getting into today's episode, as I mentioned, my recently played is a little in theme. I've been thinking about Doom recently. And because I've been thinking about Doom, I thought it would be fun to talk about kind of the impact Doom had on the gaming world. And we've talked about many of the games that we're going to be discussing a bit in detail today. But we're going to go over Doom clones. We talked about original Doom way back in episode 16. And a few episodes later in episode 18, we talked about Chex Quest. And then in episode 169, we talked about Duke Nukem 3D. So it's safe to say that we've covered Doom and Doom-like games already. But there's kind of this section of first-person shooter history where everyone really wanted to be like Doom. And that really involved a lot of games that were very Doom-like coming out, some more so than others. So what better way to celebrate this history by going over some famous Doom clones? And before we do so, I'm going to lay down some arbitrary ground rules. So rule number one is that we're not going to talk about any new games. So we won't be talking about Dusk, we won't be talking about Iron Fury, Proteus, Supplice, any other quote-unquote Doom-like games that have been released in the last couple of years, thanks to this kind of resurgence in boomer shooters.
Yeah, right.
Rule number two is that all the games we're going to talk about have to come out after Doom, which sounds silly, but there's a lot of games that people rope into as Doom clones that came out like between Wolfenstein and Doom. So they're not really Doom clones if they didn't come out after Doom. They're Wolfenstein clones, but we're not talking about Wolfenstein clones. That's a kind of different mess of worms that we could get into.
Is Doom a Wolfenstein clone?
No, I wouldn't say so.
Doom is like a Wolfenstein evolution.
Exactly. And I think what's important to understand about a Doom clone is that while some Doom clones use the Wolfenstein engine, they have a very particular style to them. The copious amounts of gore, kind of doing something a bit more edgier than what maybe Wolfenstein was doing, or kind of appealing to more of a sci-fi aesthetic. Now, the third rule in my arbitrary rule set is that the game has to feel like it definitely was trying to capitalize on Doom. So what I mean by this is that you could arguably say that Half-Life took some cues from Doom. I would not call Half-Life a Doom clone. Rule number four is we're not going to go too in-depth on games we've already talked about, with a little caveat to this. We're going to talk about some games that I might have talked about in like my recently plays, but we're not going to talk about any games that we did an episode on. So we're not talking about Duke Nukem 3D. We're not talking about Chex Quest. We already did episodes on those, and whether or not people want us to revisit those, that's totally up to you, but we're going to leave those out of this discussion. And the last rule, and probably the most important rule, is that the opinions we're going to express are solely our own. So if we mention that a game is really bad, this is our opinion. And if you have a problem with this, you can let us know by emailing classicgamingbrothers@gmail.com and telling us how wrong we are. Also, this is not a rule, but because I think it might be worth talking about these games in future episodes, we're going to skip talking about Rise of the Triad, Hexen, and Heretic. These are definitely Doom clones, but they deserve their own episodes in their own right because they've got their own rich history.
So if you started this episode thinking that we were going to be talking about Hexen and Heretic, too bad.
That's right. Now, starting off, I kind of broke down this into the good, the meh, and the ugly, as opposed to the good, the bad, and the ugly. And I'm probably ripping off like 12 YouTubers who have done the same thing already. But in any case, we have some very obvious Doom clones out there that are certainly still good games. So we're going to talk about those first. And one of those games that is actually one I discovered very recently is Realms Realms of the Haunting. It was a 1996 game, and it is odd. It plays more like an adventure game that had a baby with Doom. You walk around in these full 3D worlds, you click on things to interact with them. You do get a pistol, you actually have to find it. It's like on a table somewhere, you barely notice it. And when you get the pistol, instead of being like dead center of the screen, you have to aim it with your mouse to shoot things. But it still has kind of like a Doom aesthetic to it. It also features FMV sequences that are beautifully dated, and it is a really interesting game. It was developed by Gremlin Interactive, and according to some sources, it was one of their most expensive games to produce, which shows by just the sheer amount of 3D world building and also the FMVs. In the game, you play as a guy named Adam Randall, and you're exploring a big old haunted house, and you meet the ghost of your dad, and he's taken captive by what I assume are Knight Templars. They're knights with those like round helmets, and they
got
big swords.
Crosses?
Well, they're in black and white because the FMVs don't have good color, but they have like the crosses on them.
Do they have crosses on their tabards?
I'm pretty sure.
Then they're probably Knights Templars.
They take your ghost dad hostage, and then you go and explore the rest of the house. And as you're exploring the house, you find out the house has portals to different dimensions, and you also find out that you're the chosen one, and it's your job to stop those portals from opening.
This is a callback, but what if those portals connected to Darkseid?
Oh, that would be beautiful. Now, Realms of the Haunting scored really well on release. It got a 4 out of 5 stars from the publication The Next Generation, a 4.5 out of 5 stars from Computer Gaming World, and an 8.5 out of 10 from GameSpot. And I'll tell you, if you want to play Realms of the Haunting right now, as of the recording of this episode, it is on sale for some reason, and it is 74 cents.
You'll have literally Sunday and Monday to get it for 74 cents.
Yes. Most of the time it's $2.99, which is still pretty inexpensive for a game that I thought is pretty robust, and apparently has 40 something hours of gameplay. Like, it is a dense game.
And apparently you should also read the manual, which is included in the Steam folders, because there is no handholding in this game.
There isn't. It took me a while to figure out like one of the early puzzles, which helps you get through a door. Click on candles, that's all I'll say.
And apparently when it was originally released, it came on 4 CDs.
I'm not surprised. It is a chunky game. It's like 1.6 gigs or something. For a game from 1996, any game that's above like 400 megs is incredible to me.
So our next game under the good category is going to be Strife: Quest for the Sigil. Developed by Rogue Entertainment in 1996, Strife is a first-person RPG built in the Doom engine. The game features a semi-open world that allows you to tackle different quests in your own way. It is also a game notable for having NPCs that are neutral and friendly, which if you recall any time in Doom, you would know is not something that Doom has. Yeah, so this is fun because you can interact with people around and they're not trying to kill you. Another unique thing is that the game has voiceover work, which also makes the game stand out over other games in the Doom engine.
In a small world, word travels fast. I hear you just removed some obstacles from your path. Nice work. Are you interested in some more lucrative projects? Good. Some friends of mine need someone silenced. Belden is being held by the Order in their sanctuary. There's a rarely used entrance by a small pier off the river, which is unguarded. Get in, shut him up, and bring his ring back to me as proof.
The game also has a fantasy sci-fi setting, with weapons being like knives, crossbows, or a flamethrower. All blends together. You also have access to an inventory that you can store medkits and other consumables. There is also a stealth mechanic where enemies can be killed without alerting other enemies. Throughout the game, you play as the protagonist, who was captured by a religious militaristic sect called the Order. After escaping prison, you then take on various jobs, such as assassinating Order members or talking to people. Aliens eventually get involved because this game does eventually jump the shark.
It's a first-person shooter that came out in the 90s. Of course, aliens got involved.
The game was very well received, especially the voiceover work, with which a GameSpot review called the sexiest thing to ever resonate from my computer speaker. Reviews, however, were critical that the game really only offers the illusion on non-linearity, and it isn't open-ended as it appears. The game in recent years would also go on to be compared to Deus Ex, which I think came out around the same time.
The first Deus Ex came out in 2000. This was 3-4 years before.
So I think that this game probably was pretty successful, and I think that if it came out after Deus Ex, I think people would know, like, right up off the bat that it was not nonlinear. At the time of the release of the game, it scored fairly well with a 7 out of 10 from GameSpot and 4 out of 5 out of 5 stars from Computer Games Strategy Plus, and a grade of a B from PC Games. Night Dive would go on to remaster the game in 2014.
Now, our next game of the good batch is a game for the Amiga, and that's Gloom, as opposed to Doom. Released in 1995 and developed by Black Magic Software, Gloom was released to give Amiga users the FPS experience that PC users were bragging about. So if you were the kid on the playground whose family had an Amiga computer and your friend had the PC and just got Doom, you were probably happy that Gloom came out, because now you could stop caring about what your friend was telling you about how great Doom was. Gloom was developed in a year, starting in May of 1994. The game also doesn't shy away from the fact that it is in fact a Doom clone. In fact, most of the advertising I saw for it say it's Doom for the Amiga. In an interview with the British magazine The One, Mark Sibley, one of the game's developers, noted the name Gloom started out as a joke, but would end up sticking. They considered a few other names, such as Gorefest 95, but internally they decided to just keep it as Gloom because they kept calling it Gloom no matter the name they gave it. In the magazine, the team also notes that they tried very hard to avoid copying Doom outright, as they wanted to instead focus on making assets and art that was original and stood out. Gloom was heavily praised on release, earning itself a 90% from the publication CU Amiga and a 90% from The One. In the review from The One, they did make note about the lack of a large arsenal and ability to only carry one weapon at a time. They felt this limited the game as a whole, as a game like Doom offered you the ability to carry all of your weapons at once. Now, a fun fact about Gloom is that it has two settings: messy, or meaty. Messy setting enables the enemies to explode more violently, but their gibs will disappear. Meaty setting, enemies explode less violently, but their gibs remain persistent throughout the level until you finish the level.
So the next game that's still in our good list is Power Slave. The original Power Slave, called Exhumed in Europe, was released in 1999 for MS-DOS, PS1, and Sega Saturn. It's a FPS game where you play as a dude who enters an Egyptian tomb in the city of Karnak and awakens the spirit of King Ramsay. Ramsay then tells you to go to different parts of Egypt to collect items that he'll inevitably claim as his own.
I think they're all called, like, the Thing of Ramses.
Yeah, because Ramsay decided that those items, because he's now back to being alive-ish, those items now belong to him, because everything in Egypt belongs to Ramsay. The game is very fun. It features a lot of fast-paced action. The maps are also pretty big, with the ability to go back and explore them further when you have different abilities, like a higher jump. The game is also interesting in that the ports are fairly different from each other due to technical limitations. The PC version was built in the Build engine, but the console versions feature unique versions of the game built in the Slave Driver engine, which is a fun name for an engine where you are doing something for an Egyptian pharaoh, and the game is called Power Slave. Now, this engine allowed for a true 3D world to be created, as opposed to a faux 3D world that the Build in the Doom engine offered. Another interesting quirk is that the PlayStation 1 and Saturn versions have different level designs, because the developers realized that some levels didn't really work well on the PS1 hardware, or didn't work well on the Saturn hardware. This means that the version of one level in one port of the game may play differently in the other one. The Saturn would also get exclusive power-ups and the ability to utilize explosives as a way to jumping higher. The console versions also have better lighting than the PC version, which had to rely on the lighting limitations of the version of the Build engine that it used. The NTSC Saturn version also contains a hidden mini-game called Death Tank, a competitive 2D multiplayer game. The PAL version doesn't have it, but don't worry. Back in the 90s or early 2000s when this came out, the PAL version people and the NTSC version people never talked. In 2021, Night Dive Studios would go on to release a remastered version of the game called Power Slave Exhumed, taking the North American name and the European name and combining them to be one. The Night Dive version of this game is also pretty unique, as it combines the PC version with elements from the Saturn and PlayStation versions of this game. We talk about about the rise of boomer shooters, and I'm not going to say that Night Dive helped with it, but Night Dive remastered a lot of them, and Night Dive also does a pretty good job at remastering boomer shooters.
This episode is basically like brought to you by Night Dive, because we're going to keep mentioning them too.
Right. They love boomer shooters over there, though, and as we'll go on, you'll find that they have remastered more. You could even say that Dark Forces is a boomer shooter, which they just remastered. System Shock, though, I would not say is a boomer shooter.
Nor would I call System Shock a Doom clone. People sometimes call the original System Shock a Doom clone.
I call System Shock a very complicated Bioshock.
Well, I call the very original System Shock homework, because you need literally every key on your keyboard for a different thing.
Yes, yes, yes. But the remastered is very good. It is also not any less complicated.
Now, the last game in our good category is Blood, released in 1997 by Monolith Productions. Blood, like Power Slave, was made in the Build Engine, which, for those who don't know, the Build Engine is the engine used for things like Duke Nukem, Redneck Rampage, and Shadow Warrior. Like those games, your character will sometimes talk when interacting with items or weapons, usually providing like a small quip, though I will say that Caleb in Blood is a lot less talkative than Duke or Lo Wang in Shadow Warrior.
I live again.
I would say that while Blood is definitively a Build Engine game, so very much based more in line with like what Duke Nukem was doing, it, without any pun intended, bleeds Doom influence. There's copious amounts of blood, characters are exploding, there's satanic imagery, gothic set pieces. It just feels Doom-like. And it's a great game. You play as Caleb, a former cultist who worshipped a god named Chernabog, and in the game of Blood, Caleb is resurrected from his grave and goes on a quest to find his lost lover, Ophelia. And to do this, he uses guns. Now, the game has what I consider some of the most satisfying weapons in, like, any boomer shooter. There is a flare gun that will ignite your enemies on fire, a Tommy gun that does exactly what you would want a Tommy gun to do, a double-barreled shotgun that can be either fired one barrel at a time or two barrels for maximum effect, and TNT, which you just throw, and it's fantastic. Like, you throw it at walls, and you blow up walls, you throw it at zombies, you blow up zombies. Great game. And guess what? Night Dive also did a remaster called Fresh Supply, Blood Fresh Supply, which came out in 2019.
So if what we described sound like fun games to play, those were good games, so you can check them out. These games are not necessarily bad games, but they're not necessarily good games. This category is decidedly meh. Starting off our meh category is Corridor 7 Alien Invasion. Released in 1994 and developed by Capstone Software, Corridor 7 Alien Invasion uses the Wolfenstein engine. However, unlike Blake Stone or Rise of the Triad, it uses it really badly. The game isn't the worst, as relying on the Wolfenstein engine means it's playable, but it suffers from a variety of issues. One major one is that it's hard to tell when enemies are shooting you because the screen will just flash and there really isn't any audio cue to show you where it's coming from. This can be annoying, as it means you don't always realize that you're being attacked, and then you just die. Another problem is that the graphics are just kind of bland, so if you don't use the map, you get lost. Which, I mean, there are good games that happens to as well. There's also just randomly flashing and no audio to cue you to where you're getting shot from, being bland and getting lost. Probably not what you want to mix it in.
I got lost in the first level of Corridor 7 when I was playing it, because it loops, and I didn't realize it looped until I opened up my mini map and saw, oh, this loops. Every corridor in Corridor 7 looks identical.
Now, in Corridor 7, the game features you as a lone special forces unit entering the mysterious Corridor 7, which is a top secret research lab. And in this lab, you fight aliens, because why not? It's the 90s. One clever thing the game does is that when you start off the game, if you turn around and go through the first door, you'll see a long hallway. Go to the left and you'll be greeted by the credits for who worked the game floating in front of you. Now, when the game was released, it got mostly negative scores, largely because it felt incredibly dated using the Wolfenstein engine. A sequel, Corridor 8, I don't think a unique name for a game that's coming after Corridor 7. It was planned and was going to be put into the Build engine, but then, thank goodness, somebody canceled it. And reminder, these are the games that we determined are meh.
Another game that is meh is Zero Tolerance. I've talked about Zero Tolerance before, and I don't hate Zero Tolerance. It's a 1994 game developed by Technopop and was released for the Sega Genesis, which is unique in its own right, because so far all the games we've talked about have pretty much been either PC or like that one Amiga game, Gloom. This is the first like console game we've talked about. It's fun if you like old first-person shooters and you like the Sega Genesis. I'm a Sega Genesis fan. I love old first-person shooters. I can find Zero Tolerance enjoyable. However, because it is on the Sega Genesis, the graphic limitations are really rough. For one thing, you have a restricted view. I would say that like 40% of your view is what your character is seeing. The rest of it is UI. You have like a picture of your character's face, your ammo, the map, what items your character is holding. There's just random things that don't actually indicate anything. And really, it's just this like small square is actually your character's viewpoint. This was done because the Sega Genesis just can't render 3D the same way that like a PC could. So they had to make some limitations. And I will say it's just rough. Playing it on an actual Sega Genesis on like a TV, it doesn't make it an easy game to play. And it can be rough because your enemies at a distance will just appear as like 2 to 3 pixels. So sometimes I can't tell if it's an enemy or a health pickup, but then it starts shooting at me and then I know it's an enemy. In the game, you play as a group of special commandos called Zero Tolerance who are called onto a space station to deal with some bad guys. You have a variety of characters to pick. They don't really differ. They're just different characters, different faces. And what's kind of cool though is that these characters act as your lives. So when you die, the character on the select screen will be marked as deceased, and then you go to the next character, and so on and so on. So it's almost like a roguelike in that sense, right? You're playing as a new person every time.
What happens if you run out of characters?
Game over. What is unfortunate though is that this game only was released on the Sega Genesis, and there is no PC version or like a modern day update to it. There was some guy in like Russia making an update, though I think that was just like a personal project. You can buy Zero Tolerance on Steam. It's published by Pico Interactive. It's literally just the Sega ROM without any like updates to it. So it plays exactly as you would play it if you downloaded it for any emulator, which is unfortunate. It'd be nice to see someone, not necessarily maybe Night Dive, but just someone remaster this game with like high def graphics and just kind of bring this game to life. Because I think Zero Tolerance is a game that could be really fun for other people if it wasn't limited to what it has.
Our next game under the Met category is PO'd. The 3DO, which is a game system that we talked about back when Zach was absent for the first time, when Jim and I talk about the 3DO, had not only a pretty poor port of Doom, but it also had a kind of mediocre Doom clone. Released in 1995 for the 3DO by the company Any Channel, and would later also go on to be ported to the PlayStation 1 in 1996, PO'd is a game, which is, the game is spelled with a capital P and an O, an apostrophe, and then ED. PO'd is a game where you play as a chef who has crashed a spaceship on an alien planet, because once again, it's the 90s, and you must fight aliens with your assortment of chef tools. The game has a kind of parody aspect to it, with the weapons all being chef-themed, frying pans, cleavers, etc. You also pick up alien weapons, and you can utilize those. Those are not chef-themed. Those are just alien weapons. Russell Flupop, who worked on PO'd, has stated that game like Doom and Dark Forces were a big influence. They also wanted the game to feel less like being stuck in a tunnel or a labyrinth and instead feel more open. Which, to be fair, Doom and Dark Forces both feel like you're being stuck in a tunnel. A
little less in Dark Forces, but definitely Doom.
Oh, I don't know. Ryan and I were recently playing Dark Forces where we were trying to find Moth Rebus, and we decided we felt like we were stuck in a tunnel because the entire level takes place in this sewage tunnel. PO'd is certainly ambitious. Most critics were frustrated by the controls, but some said the game had unique weapons and were overall creative. The publication Maximum didn't feel this way at all, and stated the game was one of the worst 3D action titles on any format, and gave the game 1 out of 5 stars. Next Generation was kinder, giving it 4 out of 5 stars, and noted that the game felt like a labor of love. EGM reviewed the PS1 version and ranked the game at a 6.125 out of 10. The review called the game dull, but said that the humor was its saving grace in terms of originality, though noted that it quickly gets annoying. However, have no fear. If you want to play the PO'd game and you don't want to play it on a 3DO or a PlayStation 1, don't worry. On April 1st, of this year, Night Dive announced that they were going to remaster PO'd. I don't actually know if that's true.
It is. On April 2nd, Night Dive said we weren't kidding.
Nice.
All right, so we've gone through the good. We've gone through the meh. Let's talk about the ugly. These are the bottom of the barrel games. These are the games that you don't want to play. If you're playing these games, sometimes I'm playing these games. You're probably like me. That's why you're playing these games, because you're Zach. One of the first games in this ugly, ugly barrel is Operation Body Count. It's Capstone. The people that brought us Corridor 7, they're back again with the 1994 shooter, Operation Body Count. And guess what? They didn't learn their lesson from Corridor 7, because this game is utilizing the Wolfenstein engine. And let me tell you, if you thought Corridor 7 was bad, we put in the meh. Operation Body Count's in the ugly.
So what you're telling me is the company that was like, we're gonna make a game called Corridor 8, the sequel to Corridor 7, which was a mediocre game, went out and canceled Corridor 8 and instead created Corridor 8 Operation Body Count.
Yes and no, in that Operation Body Count is very different than Corridor 7. It has a lot of the same problems as Corridor 7 does, but it has some new, even more interesting problems. For example, it has inconsistent frame rates, which is weird considering it's a game running on the Wolfenstein engine, as in Wolfenstein, the game that can run on basically anything. It has inconsistent frame. I was having inconsistent frame rates playing the official version of Operation Body Count on Steam, because this is how broken the game is. In the game, you play as a member of the government assault team who is tasked with saving the UN from terrorists. You start the game in the sewers and gradually make your way up through the sewers to other floors. There are 40 levels, and they're all pretty much identical. I think Corridor 7 has some charm to it, right? It's this nice, fun sci-fi game. It's got some, you know, little bit of quirks to it, but overall playable. Operation Body Count is not playable. It's not fun. It's fun if you like bad games, maybe. Like, I was having a good time playing it because I think it's just silly, but it is just a slog. Another thing is that it's ugly. It's just an ugly, ugly game. The graphics are very bland. You start out in a sewer and everything is just like green. And a lot of the sprites are just redrawn from Doom. As in, they literally just like took sprites from Doom and they just drew over them. And they're like, there, completed, done our homework. It's not a great game. Though it is available on Steam if you want to pick it up. It's a couple of bucks. And when it released, people also agreed it wasn't a great game because it got some mediocre reviews and most people criticized, in fact, the ugly wall textures.
So our next two games we're going to talk about together, and that is Tasty Temple Challenge and a game called Mr. Pib. Both of these games were developed by Brand Games. Mr. Pib was released in 1998. And Tasty Temple Challenge was in 2000. We actually talked about Tasty Temple Challenge a little bit when we talked about our fast food games, which is a wonderful episode. But these games are FPS games made to sell some tasty food. In Mr. Pib, you play as a child who has to deal with zombies at school. To stop the zombies, you must do what all people can do once they drink Mr. Pib. You belch on them. In Tasty Temple Challenge, you play as an adventurer who must find a grande meal inside an ancient temple. You shoot hot sauce at enemies, and both of the games are essentially the same. One, you use hot sauce, and the other, you burp. They also both control horribly. There's a kind of a weird bobbing motion that occurs when you walk, which can be disorienting, especially after you've just eaten the food from either of these companies, and the graphics kind of just meld together.
If anything, though, Tasty Temple Challenge is probably not the worst thing Taco Bell ever put out.
Mr. Pib game makes me just want to pour a glass of Mr. Pib and boot that game up.
You should do that, and then order a Nacho Grande or whatever from Taco Bell. And
I haven't eaten Taco Bell.
Now's the time. You know what we should do, Seth? For Extra Life, we should get Taco Bell and Mr. Pib, and we should play both these games.
I want to say 15 years I haven't eaten Taco Bell.
Well, we're going to break that streak in November for Extra Life. The next game on our ugly list is Island Peril, released in 1996, developed by Electric Fantasies. This game, I would say, is very popular fodder for YouTubers, especially when talking about bad Doom clones. There's tons of videos online about Island Peril, and really, who can blame them? It's a bad game. The story in Island Peril is told mostly through FMVs, starring people who don't look very interested in the role. You play as Dick Danger, who's a womanizing former cop who has to save his girlfriend, Samantha Sweet Cheek Smith, from the evil boss. You travel to Longoria Island and you shoot people when you get there. Most of the enemies are like bodybuilders and nerds and floating tiki heads. Also, kind of like good old Operation Body Count, Island Peril uses some stolen Doom assets, because you know what? If a game is good, steal its assets. Many of the characters you're fighting in the game are digitized actors, set against very colorful, ugly backgrounds. I will say that the FMVs can be kind of fun, specifically those of the evil boss. The actor playing him seems to be having the best of times.
Don't you recognize the voice of Doom when you hear it? You can rest assured that after 7 years in San Quentin, I have not forgotten you! But actually, I have here with me a lovely young intern of yours, whom you might remember. Say hello, Sweet Cheek.
Dick, you're my only hope. I'm so scared. Please help me.
Oddly enough, the game did get a really decent review from PC Entertainment, who liked the graphics and the gameplay, and in their review, they say, Island Peril ain't Doom, but it ain't bad. More modern reviews, however, have been less kind. Abandonware has compiled a bunch of reviews and has rated it a 2.6 out of 5. And I will say, after playing it myself, it feels like a 2.6 out of 5 kind of game.
So the next game that we're going to talk about in our ugly list is William Shatner's Tech War, based on the novels of the same name, which bear the Shatner name, but were ghostwritten by Ron Goulart. Tech War is a 1995 game developed by Capstone, who has shown up multiple times, and I think at least all of them either meh or bad.
Yeah.
William Shatner's Tech War is built on the Build engine, which sounds great until you play it. The game features a hub, specifically a subway station, and all of the levels are connected via this hub. All NPCs can be killed, including innocent people and cops, and if you kill too many people that you shouldn't have, William Shatner will scold you.
Couldn't you have been more careful? The body count keeps rising, and it's harder and harder to justify it. We're not the killers. They are. Try to remember that.
You are also given some missions that reward you for non-lethal takedowns of targets, and if you kill the target, Shatner will scold you. You play as an ex-cop, brought into the service by Walter Bascom, played by Shatner, to apprehend tech lords. Tech is a street drug that has become rampant, and tech lords are those people who deal it. It's also implied through dialogue that your character may also be an ex-cop because he broke laws. As Shatner references sending you back to cryosleep, and if you succeed in your mission to take down the tech lords, he indicates that your charges will be dismissed. So from my understanding of this game, you're a criminal hired to take down criminals by the police.
Yeah.
Tech War has a lot of ambition, but fails in a lot of points. One major point is that enemies will shoot you before they are even visible, which is annoying. They can also be so small that they are pixels on the screen and still able to hit you. And guess what? You can't hit them. The game had mediocre reviews, with one review from Next Generation, not affiliated with Star Trek, stating that the only thing that may get people to play it is William Shatner, and giving the game a 1 out of 5. William Shatner gave it a 5 Shatners out of 5.
It's the best game I've ever played.
The game is a bit annoying to try and get running these days, if you are curious. However, it's in ExoDOS, though. Even though ExoDOS is pretty good, you may have to play around with the settings before it actually works well. You could also try running it through a build source port like BuildGDX, but it seems a bit more complicated to set up the original Shatner videos, which are helpful to know what you're doing.
So one thing about Tech War, I played a bit of Tech War to do research for this episode. I first tried to launch it in BuildGDX. No videos. And I was like, oh, I did something wrong. So I was like, let me install it through ExoDOS and try it again. So I installed it through ExoDOS and played it through ExoDOS. It ran badly, as in the game stuttered. ExoDOS has never given me issues with any first-person shooters. For some reason, this game, it just does not want to run normally. So you appear in a subway station, and it's a shooter. So what's the first thing you do? You start clicking around buttons, right? I pressed one button, and my character walked backwards, and I got hit by a subway. So I respawned and I walked around a bit and I was like, oh, let me just press a couple of buttons to kind of familiarize me with my controls. I clicked another button and I drew my pistol and everyone around me got scared because no one around me was the enemy. So all of the cops started pointing their guns at me and all of the innocent people started running away screaming, he's got a gun. And I said, I think I'm doing something wrong. That's just how tech war plays out. In fact, if you kill too many people, even bad guys, Shatner will scold you. He'll be like,
keep screwing up like that, and I can guarantee you a trip back to the freezer. Can't you figure out that if you kill his goons, DeMarco's reinforcements will be even tougher? Keep the carnage to a minimum, or better yet, none at all.
What do you want me to do, Shatner? Now, the last game we're going to talk about is something different. It's called The Virginia Incident. Developed by Perceptum in 1998 and released in some places as Alien Anarchy, the game Incidente om Virginia is a shooter based on a UFO sighting in Virginia, Brazil. It is certainly noteworthy because it's the first-person shooter out of Brazil. It's also noteworthy because it's a really bad first-person shooter. It's plagued by a ton of issues, from poor signaling on when an enemy is attacking you to considerable slowdowns. One YouTuber that I watched a video, Civi11, he made note that you really also have to play with your DOSBox settings to get this game to run. He said you could either play the game so that it runs kind of well, but everyone will shoot you really fast, or you can play the game so that it runs very slowly and everyone shoots you normally. There's like no middle ground. The graphics are a mess. The AI in the game can cause some issues. There are civilians in the game, similar to Tech War, and if you shoot those civilians by accident because they run in front of your gun sometimes, you will be scolded by the game and that the game will just end. According to an interview I found on the Brazilian website uol.com.br with the game designer Marcos Fernandes Cuziol, after the game's release, they were contacted by United States Special Forces. And here's what Marcos had to say. They wanted to use the game in multiplayer mode with specific missions to train Delta soldiers. I explained that we were a Brazilian company and recommended Novalogic, which at the time were launching their first Delta Force game. Not long after, the American Special Forces Training Center and Novalogic signed an agreement. So, Seth, here, I'm just going to post a picture of what this game looks like.
That looks like... Do you know what this looks like? This game, you know what this game looks like? This game looks like you're playing the original XCOM.
But from like a first person.
But you've gone to first person perspective, but the game has not changed. You're just in first person perspective of an XCOM game where the sprites are the same. No one approached them to have their special forces trained. That did not happen. If that person was lying.
Do you like that third screenshot I put where you see the civilian just walking down the hallway during a firefight?
So is the civilian the green person?
Or no, the civilian's the person in gray.
But aren't the aliens wearing gray?
You're supposed to help the aliens.
Oh, so the aliens are civilians?
No, there's just civilians also in the game.
That look very similar to the aliens.
Yes.
And also, the green people look like the enemies?
Yeah, the green people are the enemies. According to the same interview I read, the game sold about 2,000 units in Brazil, though it apparently would go on to sell 20,000 units worldwide. And from a couple of reports I heard, including a video I was watching, a lot of those were in Russia. Also, apparently someone on Reddit is trying to work on a source port for the game. Good for them. I wish them all the luck in the world. And that will do it for our Doom clones episode. Seth, what do you think? What do you think of all these Doom clones? You going to go out and go play one?
I bought at least one from the list.
Nice. Is it Virginia Incident?
I did. I bought 6 copies of that and I sent them to all my friends that work in the Special Forces and said, don't worry. No, I bought Realms of the Haunting because I thought that looks like a fun game.
Yeah, so that's our Doom clone episode. Kind of a different pace of an episode than our usual, but I thought it'd be fun to cover a whole bunch of games at once just so I don't get tempted to write an entire episode based on the Virginia Incident. Well, to get into our retro rewind, Seth had me play Pokemon Pinball, which was a nice change of pace from the games he usually has me play, because it's a great game. I love Pokemon Pinball.
Yeah, because usually I would have you play games like the Virginia Incident.
And who knows, maybe you will have me play the Virginia Incident sometime. Pokemon Pinball was developed by HAL Laboratory and the company Jupiter in 1999. It's a great game. You play pinball with Pokemon. Basically, there are two tables, red and blue. Each table handles a bit differently, just as the real Pokemon Red and Pokemon Blue handle a bit differently. Your goal is to catch Pokemon and get points. Though, when I played Pokemon Pinball as a kid, I always just did the points part. I never really was good at catching the Pokemon part. You kind of have to, like, get your Pokeball in a certain place, and then you, like, the Pokeball gets tossed at the Pokemon at the center, and you have to do something, like, repeatedly to catch the Pokemon. Anyway, the game cartridge comes with a Rumble Pack, and that's always fun to play the game with because it shakes a little when you're playing the game. It gives you a little tactile feedback, which is nice. I like having a little bit of feedback when I'm playing my games. I like having Rumble enabled. So it's a fun little game. Pokemon Pinball is just a simple pinball game, and it works really well despite the limitations of the Game Boy. You'd think a Game Boy pinball game just wouldn't hold up because, you know, small screen, but it works really well, and it has some, like, fun graphics, and it's Pokemon themed, so you can't really go wrong. Next week, Seth, I want you to play a game by HAL Laboratory, The Adventures of Lolo, for the NES.
Great. Zach had me not play Pokemon, but he had me play RoboCop versus the Terminator, which was released in 1993 for the SNES in North America, and then was released across multiple systems, including the Master System, Game Gear, Genesis, and Game Boy. It's a run-and-gun game where, you know, the main character runs around on foot and shoots people. You play as RoboCop. Apparently, RoboCop and Terminator exist in the same world canonically, which is something I didn't know. But, so you play as RoboCop, and you have to fight Terminators because of Skynet. So, like, the basis of the game is that, like, RoboCop's just doing whatever, and these people are developing Skynet, or, like, the software that will become Skynet, and eventually Skynet tries to, like, start to awaken and all that jazz, and then RoboCop is like, oh, I gotta report in, like, my regular, like, orders that I gotta do, and gotta call in command, and when he calls in command, Skynet attempts to bottom and goes in and kills the human part of RoboCop and just leaves the robot. But he doesn't die and then is pissed and wants to kill Skynet. And that's why he's killing Terminators. And that's the plot of the game. But apparently, I read into it, and apparently they are connected, like, in the worlds. Yeah, so you play as RoboCop, and you have to fight Terminators. The story on the SNES version is told over comic panels, and it's as convoluted as I just made it out to be. The game is okay. It's got decent-sized sprites, run-and-gun platforming actions. If you play it far enough, you get to, like, a Mode 7, like, tank level. However, it's a little repetitive, and a little slow. However, if you wanted to go faster, you can just play the Genesis version, which is faster, but doesn't have any comic panels, which is a good thing, because the comic panels are slow. So if you want to check this game out, which is a solid C- of a game, I would recommend checking out the Genesis version and not the SNES version, which is what Zach had me play. Does it hold up? I think it holds up as well as any running gun games of that era. I don't think it's a bad running gun game of the era. I think it's just a mediocre running gun game of the era. And unfortunately, with the amount of games that are out there today, a mediocre running gun game from the 90s, it's probably not on anyone's true top list of games to check out. Next week, Zach, you can play Super Off-Road for the MS-DOS.
I will. Thank you, Seth. With that, I want to thank everyone for listening to this episode of Classic Gaming Brothers. If you have any memories of any of the games that we talked about today, please email us at classicgamingbrothers@gmail.com. We're available wherever podcasts can be found, via Podbean, iTunes, or iHeartRadio. And you can follow us on Facebook, Classic Gaming Brothers, Instagram, Classic Gaming Brothers, X, CG Brothers Pod, Blue Sky, CG Brothers Pod, or Threads, Classic Gaming Brothers. We're also now available on YouTube. So go to YouTube, Classic Gaming Brothers, subscribe. And with that, Seth, am I forgetting anything?
Don't play games like my brother.
And don't play games like my brother.
I've been Seth.
I've been Zach.
And we've been the Classic Gaming Brothers.
That's right.